It's the time of year when we're all thinking about goals and priorities. Now is the time to plan your next trip. Whatever kind of travel fills you up, whether it's lounging on the beach, connecting with family and friends, or going on a foreign adventure, Expedia has the tools you need to plan a great trip. Download the Expedia app or visit Expedia.com to start planning. You do need to be a One Key member to use price tracking. Signing up is easy and free. Expedia, made to travel. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help, and can't get a hold of anyone. If you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm Oprah Winfrey. Welcome to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is time. Taking time to be more fully present. Your journey to become more inspired and connected to the deeper world around us starts right now.
Well, I have to say it feels like more than an honor. You know, people say the word, I'm so honored. But it feels like a privilege to be able to sit with you because I think that you have been favored with, gifted with, such an ability to create an aperture for people to see themselves through your words. And so it feels like I'm sitting in the presence of some kind of majesty with the way that you are able to do that. So I thank you for taking the time to be here with me, because I have read all of your works and I come away from every experience, especially Men We Have Reaped, Salvaged Bones, especially all of them. I come away from every one of them with that Negro spiritual in mind. I know I've been changed. And so what does it feel like for you on your side of it to have this gift?
I think that most of the time, it doesn't feel like it's a given, right? I think, like most writers, I struggle with it often.
But you know you have the gift.
I know, right? I have the gift.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, yeah. Sort of outside, right?
I need the tissues already. Okay. Yeah, I'm just tearing up at them. Yeah. Okay, so you know you have the gift.
I know you have the gift.
Yeah.
But when you're actually sitting down doing the work,
yeah.
I don't think I'm necessarily aware of it. Like, mm-hmm. I think I become so immersed in the world and mm-hmm. and with the characters that I'm writing about that I'm just sort of less aware of it. And mm-hmm. it feels like, I don't know, it just feels like I'm in some liminal space with real people. Mm. Because my characters, whenever I'm sitting with them, they seem very alive
yeah.
to me.
Well, obviously, they do. They come alive.
Don't go anywhere. More to come after this short break.
No two travelers are exactly alike, and that means no two trips should be either. Texas' vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activities allow for an infinite number of different travel experiences. Are you a beach person? Well, you'll be having fun under the sun with Texas' 350 miles of coastline. If you're more of a rugged vacation type, there are campgrounds, hiking trails, and state parks galore. And foodies can't get enough of Texas' world-famous barbecue and Tex-Mex. Enjoy live music, visit internationally recognized art museums, and check out thrilling cowboy experiences. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom, visually-led trip matched to their unique interests. Visit traveltexas.com/get-your-own to get the only trip to Texas that matters, yours. That's traveltexas.com/get-your-own. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
You know, we're both from Mississippi. That's one of the things that first drew me to you as a writer. And I'm wondering how you still live there, how being in that space affects or influences your writing at all.
Yeah, I made the decision to return home mm-hmm. and to live and work and write at home as an adult, because I wanted to see what it would be like. Mm-hmm. Because I basically fled when I graduated from mm-hmm. high school. I thought, I need to get out and
go
somewhere else. Right, yeah. Right. But then I returned, and I think it serves my work, it serves my writing, because it keeps me honest, right? Because I'm surrounded by the kind of people that I write about. You know, I have a really mm-hmm, large mm-hmm. family, a really large extended family, a solid community. And so being around them, yeah, it keeps me honest. And also, I love the landscape of home. You know, it's very beautiful to me, and it inspires me. And so I think that there's worth in being like surrounded and enveloped by that landscape too, because it speaks to me, and I feel like that speaking finds its way into my work.
Yes, and you know what? This is such a spiritual journey, I thought. So because you can't get away from the spiritual component of Annis's life, why did you decide to do a story about American enslaved people at this particular time? And I ask that because I remember when I was going around in 1998, were you even born?
Yeah,
okay. In 1998, promoting the movie Beloved, the question I would get from the press all the time in every interview was, why do you want to do another movie about slavery? And I went, have there been a lot of movies about slavery?
Right.
Why do we still want to talk about slavery? That was in 1998. And I said, what stories have we heard about slavery other than Roots, you know? So what made you decide at this time that this was the time?
I got the idea from a show that I heard on NPR mm-hmm. that was about New Orleans history, right? Mm-hmm. And on that show, and this was around 8 years ago, on that show they said that out of the dozens and dozens of slave pens that were located in the city of New Orleans during the height of the domestic slave trade, that there were only two markers 8 years ago in the city of New Orleans where there were slave pens, and one of them was in the wrong location. Mm-hmm. And that was shocking to me, and also it made me emotional. Like, I started to tear up when I heard mm-hmm. it because it felt very wrong.
Like, yeah.
That idea.
That it's all been erased.
Right, that it's all been erased from
the landscape. Like, all of that happened there didn't even matter.
Right. And
it was not a marker.
Right. Yeah. And I wanted to push back against that and try to do what I could in my work to write enslaved people like Annis back into the public consciousness. Because I actually spoke to Ta-Nehisi Coates about this, because I was feeling some anxiety when The Water Dancer came out, because I was working on Let Us Descend, and I was like, I don't know if there is room for this?
Yeah.
And he said, you know, Jasmine, there were millions of enslaved people. So there are millions of stories to tell about enslaved people. And it's a very simple thing. It's a very simple statement, but it just made perfect sense.
Isn't that so interesting for us in our culture? We have to say, well, was that one enough?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Will the public receive another?
Right.
So the fact that the story has been received mm-hmm. and is now a New York, yet again, a New York Times bestseller, mm-hmm. does what for you? Makes you feel what?
It makes me feel like I did something right, mm-hmm. you know? Like, because part of what I wanted to do with Let Us Descend is I wanted to crowd the reader into Annis's life mm-hmm. and into her experience. And I wanted to immerse the reader in Annis's life.
We're so immersed. Right. We're in the stalls with her. We're on that journey.
Right.
We're also descending.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I feel like in this country that we aren't often, we're not given that experience,
yes.
right? Like we, when we talk, when we learn about enslaved people in history, when we talk about enslaved people, they're flattened, right? They're just sort of flat types, right? And we're never able to, I don't know, we're never able to
humanize.
Right, and to see them as people,
yes.
complicated, complex people.
Can I talk about just you as a writer? So I think your virtuosic way with words, the way you describe groaning rivers and murmuring trees, a crying face split with sound, emotions snagging ragged over frosted winter rocks. Where does that come from? Tell us, Jesmyn Ward, where does that come from?
I mean...
How long do you have to work to find snagging ragged over frosted winter rocks?
I have worked a lot. You know, I've studied a lot. I've read a lot, right? So I've done that work. I have worked very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of it. But I also think that... I think there's something to be said for inspiration. I think there's something to be said for the presence of the divine. I think there's something to be said for gifts and for intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Often when I'm writing, I'm so, again, it's that word again, immersed in the experience with the character, that it feels like that person is sitting there with me telling me the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way, I'm channeling it, I'm opening myself to it and hearing it.
So she, Annis, is visited by the spirit and is informed by and led by. Did you open yourself to the spirit, so to speak, before? What's your process for that?
I mean, I think I did open myself to Annis. You know, it took me around 4 or 5 years to figure out the way that I could understand Annis was through her emotion and through her grief.
Mm.
And before, like in the first 5 years that I was working on the book, I think it was actively resisting her for whatever reason. I couldn't sink into the moment with her and I couldn't clearly hear her. But then when I began to wrestle with my own grief, then I could sit in that moment with her and be vulnerable with her and feel like her longing for her mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I think, bear witness to the work that she does to move through her grief and make her way towards a new reality and a new world.
So you were able to channel the grief that you were feeling for your partner.
Right.
And use that. But in the beginning, I'm sure it just felt like this weight, this burden, this, how long before you were able to take the pain of losing someone so close to you and channeling it into something that became powerful enough to transcend that moment and then to help transform all of us who read it?
So I didn't write anything for 6 months after my partner passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to a certain point where, because that's so strange for me, I'm always writing. I write 5 days a week, at least 2 hours a day. I'm always working. And so when I went those 6 months without writing and I just felt so hopeless, you know, and low, and I was mired in my grief. And so I thought, okay, what if this is it? Like, what if you were done? What if you've written the last book that you'll ever write? And that was very sad for me, and it was painful to think that that was the case.
And is that because the words wouldn't come?
They wouldn't. I couldn't write anything.
The thing that you'd been doing forever, now you were empty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think at the heart of what I do is hope, right? I mean, I feel like that's part of my motivation for writing about the people that I write about and writing about the places that I write about, right? It always comes from a place of love and a place of hope that through my writing and through my work that, you know, by telling these stories, that can do some good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I was just so mired in grief with my partner's leaving that I didn't have that hope at that time. And so I sat with that idea that I wouldn't write anything again.
But did you give yourself time to properly mourn? Because I think that for so many people, and I think by now people who are following your story know that you lost your partner during COVID. That was just such a shock to all of us. The system, the, and you know, when I now think, I think about it all the time when people say, oh, COVID's nothing, I feel insulted.
Right.
I feel insulted. I feel that it somehow diminishes the sorrow and the grief that everybody who's been through that, people who lost their loved ones, where people say, oh, yes, I have it's nothing. Right. Because I don't even think our brains could even comprehend all of it at the same time. Did you feel that too? Was that part of it?
I did. I think that that was part of what silenced me in those first months as well. But then I heard this voice, and this voice said, the last thing that he would want is for his loss to silence you. And I said, okay. You know, it felt like a communication. And so I said, okay. And then I dove back into the book. But I think the writing of the book, you know, because that took like 2 years, right? After that, where I was working on the rough draft and then working on multiple revisions, I mean, I was still working my way through grief then. And to be honest, like, I'm still working my way through grief.
Of course you would be.
I mean, it comes and it goes. It never leaves.
Right. It's just not as often.
Right.
Yeah. And also, you never know when it's going to show up.
Right.
You never know when it's going
to
show up.
Macy's Mother's Day gift guide has the perfect gift to make mom feel special. Shop by price, like 25 and under to 100 and under. Category, like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Gifts that are already wrapped and ready to be gifted and for grandma. Get top gifts like Dolce & Gabbana Devotion, Eau de Parfum, Coach Floral Printed Leather Cassie Crossbody Bag, and Le Creuset Shallot Dutch Oven. Shop at Macy's.com/giftfinder. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank. Some things should be boring, like banking. Boring is safe and reliable. You don't want your bank to be entertaining. Entertaining is for podcasts with inspiring celebrity guests, not banks. PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life. PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. Brilliantly boring since 1865 is the service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
You know, people often ask, what do you want the readers to feel when they come away from it? I want to know what you felt when you came away from it.
It's difficult to answer that question because I don't want to spoil anything at the end. But I can say this. Part of what I learned in writing my way south with Annis and in sitting with her on her journey was that I learned that to wake up in the morning is resistance, right? To breathe is resistance. To stand up, to walk, to move at your own pace through the world, to choose to live is resistance.
Resistance against what?
Resistance against hopelessness, I think. And resistance against giving up and resistance against sinking into despair. And so writing with Annis helped me, I think, find my way to that realization. I think we came to it together in the book. And so that's what, when I was done, right, especially with the big sort of final draft, the big final version of it, that's what I sort of surfaced out of the narrative, you know, like holding on to that idea that living requires hope.
Well, that's what I want people to know too. I don't want to give anything away either. I don't want to give anything away. But I want people to know that you come out of it with this sense of hope and that her just continuing is its own form of liberation. And it is obviously a historical novel, but what do you think it has to say about where we are now?
I think that we can all learn from Annis. I think that so many people, as you said earlier, are struggling right now, you know, struggling with grief, struggling with a changed world, struggling to make their way into a future that looks very different from what they thought that their lives would mm-hmm. look like, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something to be said for following a character like Annis, who finds her way through that, mm-hmm. right? Who is able to create a, you know, new and hopeful future for herself in the midst of hardship and tragedy.
Yeah. You know, in the very beginning, when the man who sired her sees her in the room and the kiss between the two of them, mm-hmm. that happened. It's one of those things where when I first read it, I went, ah, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Women would have found mm-hmm. each other. Men would have found each mm-hmm. other. They would have found each other. Mm-hmm. When did it occur to you to make that relationship a relationship?
Pretty early on mm-hmm. in the rough draft, because like you, it came to me. Like, I think it was maybe part of her, like yeah. she was saying, this would happen, you know.
Yeah.
This person would find me, this Safi, this person would sort of pull me from my grief. This mm-hmm. person would remind me that there are lighter things.
That there's a reason to keep going.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And now that moment when you finish the manuscript and you hit send mm-hmm. and you can let it go and release it into the world, do you feel fully released, or is there a part of her that abides with you still?
Oh, there's always a part of your characters that abide with you, I think. I mean, I think, you know, all the books that I've written, those people are still with me. Mm-hmm. You know, because I love all the characters that I write. Mm-hmm. It's actually a thing where with every book that I ever finish, I always cry at the end, like once I send it off, because it makes me sad that I'm not able to live with the people, you mm-hmm. know, that I'm writing about day in and day out anymore. You mm-hmm. know, that now they'll go out in the world and they'll take on other lives and other meanings to, you know, to the audience, to readers. Mm. But they still remain with me.
Did you always know that you had this gift? How long have you always known?
I haven't. So I've always loved reading, right? Because you're a reader before.
Yes,
anything,
of course,
right?
Of course.
I've always loved reading. When I was much younger, what authors did seemed like a sort of magic.
Yeah.
Right? Like when I was in elementary school.
I still feel that.
Right? I was like, that's so magical, but I could never do that, right? And then I wrote a poem for Arbor Day when I was in sixth grade, mm-hmm. and my teachers loved it. And it was the first time that I'd ever written anything and that people responded mm-hmm. positively to it. And then that planted the seed in the back of my head. And I thought, maybe this is something that I could do when I get older. And so I began writing mostly poetry. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to tackle fiction when I was in high school.
Well, the poetry still comes through your writing.
I love poetry. Yeah. I still read a lot of poetry, and I try to incorporate it in my writing.
Yeah, yeah. Groaning rivers and murmuring trees. Absolutely poetic. So what was the first author that you read that made you go, wow?
I can't choose just one.
Okay. Choose three.
Okay. Toni Morrison, of course.
Yes. Which was the book?
Beloved.
Ooh, yeah.
Beloved. I might get some flack for saying this, but William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying mm-hmm. is a book that I love and that I read over and over again because I love the poetry of it. There's something about the South that
This is what I say about you. Mm-hmm. You know how to write the South.
Yeah.
And I think it's because you are from the South, but also live in the South and also continue to commune mm-hmm. with Southern people in that world. You know how to write the South.
Oh, thank you.
And when people compare you to Toni Morrison, I mean, isn't that just...
I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. I mean, she's Toni Morrison, right? I mean...
And you're Jesmyn Ward.
Maybe one...
Two-time winner of the National Book Award. I know when you were sitting there for the second book, mm-hmm. which was Salvage the Bones, right?
No, Sing Unburied.
It was Sing Unburied. Salvage was the first. Yes. And Sing Unburied Sing is the second. So you're thinking, I'm not going to get it because I've already won this.
Right.
Yeah, just won it.
There's no way they're going to give me this.
And then it happens.
And I was, again, it's always surreal, but just completely flabbergasted. And it was amazing. But I think it's still, I don't know if I... It is still not real to me, I think.
What's the most rewarding? I know sitting in those ceremonies, getting the award, mm-hmm. having people who are real readers mm-hmm. acclaim mm-hmm. and proclaim that yours is the book of the year. But what's the most rewarding for you?
You know, I mean, every time I'm a finalist for an award or actually win an award, it is always very meaningful to me mm-hmm. because, you know, my past and being like a hungry writer in my 20s mm-hmm. and wanting this, you know, with everything in me, like all of that still feels very present, right?
Mm-hmm. And so, that's good.
So I always appreciate everything. But I do have to admit, on the day that I saw my face on the illustrated map of Mississippi and Mississippi writers, and like it's like Richard Wright, right? William Faulkner, right? Natasha Trethewey, and then here I am, you know, Eudora Welty, and then here I am, like down on the Gulf Coast. That was very special to me because I remember being a kid in my elementary school library and seeing that map, that literary yeah. map on the wall, and thinking, wouldn't that be amazing if one day I could be on the literary map? So I don't know. That was
with Eudora Welty and Richard Wright. And yes, yeah, that's amazing.
Right.
It's amazing. Well, I thank you. You are a treasure. You are a treasure. You're a treasure for this country. You're a treasure for your writers among writers. And you have blessed us with your words. You have blessed me so. And I know I've been changed every time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. You can follow Super Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Super Soul Conversation. Thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Cyndi Lauper. My scalp was covered with psoriasis. Felt like I was trapped between a rock and a hard place. Then I started Cosentyx.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis 300 milligram dose. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for TB. Serious allergic reactions, severe skin reactions that look like eczema, and an increased risk of infections, some fatal, have occurred. Cosentyx may lower ability to fight infections, so tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if IBD symptoms develop or worsen. Learn more at Cosentyx.com or 1-844-COSENTYX.
Cosentyx works for me.
Ask your doctor about Cosentyx.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.